Let's start with the obvious. Would you introduce yourself, please?
No. Sorry. Yes, I'm Jamie Liddell.
And where do you hail from? Or do you hail anything?
I hail from Hamlet. From, well, imagine England is like this. Zoom in here. Zoom in a bit more. You've got Cambridge, Peterborough, Huntingdon, St. Neots, St. Ives. Somewhere around that crazy cluster of joy is a small hamlet called Perry, where I grew up.
England is a triangle. I've learned something. A little bit of history, and what I want you to do is take us back a bunch of years before, and then through Super Collider.
All right. I got a sampler, about 16 years old, a gift. It was a gift, in a way. And I didn't really know what to do with it. But I knew it was an instrument that had, it was like a Pandora's box, so they said. But so I put the Muppet Show into it, and it became the foundation of what was, at the time, my attempt to make hardcore music. Such was the nature of the hardcore music at the time, it did involve a lot of novelty sampling, such as the track Charlie by The Prodigy. Around about that exact time, when Charlie was a popular song in the Hit Parade in the UK, I just fashioned a song from The Muppet Show and appeared on stage in an ice rink in Peterborough with The Prodigy, age 16 years old, and thought, this is all right. I don't know why everyone's looking like, I don't know why they look like that. I'd never seen ecstasy on the face of youth. But I was to discover ecstasy myself. I'm not condoning drug use, but I cannot lie about my history. There was a fuzzy period that came after this gig that lasted many years, in which time I moved around England, some would say aimlessly. I tried to have a cause, but the only cause that seemed to be consistent was that of music. I joined various bands. No one really cared. But I persevered nonetheless. And electronics were the core of my experiments, musical experiments. And I fashioned a couple of albums. In fact, I fashioned 10 EPs in London town with two other friends of mine under the name Subhead. And then met Christian Vogel. About 1996 in Brighton. I'm doing this as quickly as I can. It's the wind of time is blowing through and kind of, you know, wafting all kinds of memories. I'm trying to avoid the ghosts as I tell the story. But there's me and Christian. He's Christian's like this, I'm like this. And we made two albums under the name Super Collider, both fantastic albums, still available in the shops. I'd recommend Raw Digits, a very underrated album from 2002, which actually takes me up to the moment where I moved to Berlin, where I was for 8 years. I've just moved to Paris. In Berlin, I made a lot of musical associations. Perhaps the most notable is Mocky, who became my collaborator, co-conspirator, and musical sideman for the Multiply album and this album, Jim, which takes us to the present day.
Beautifully put. There are tears all over town at this moment in time.
tears of joy.
And we're going to get to Mocky. We're going to get to all of that and expand that to a point of oblivion. One small piece of trivia that I found late last night, way too late, and I wonder if it's true, that you learned in primary school after you wrote a melodrama for Music and Voice that the school accused you of playing with the devil.
Yeah, it was an odd moment. Basically, there was one girl at school that was a very devout Christian, and I don't want to get into an argument about religion, but it wasn't really a religious thing. I think she just had an issue, maybe it was an issue with me. I can't really remember why she made such a fuss, but she made a big fuss. We did turn the lights out, and we sort of played music in the dark that was kind of suggesting that you do various things with your mind. But it was all harmless stuff, you know, it's all just float away. I was sort of like, obviously this was post-Prodigy gig. I won't elaborate, I think I've said enough on that. And I got into trouble with the headmaster even over that because she seemed to pull some weight amazing the power of a strong complaint voiced properly. And I think of all the things I learned from that, it was that.
Now, we're going to certainly move towards the new album, but the last thing that people would suspect is that the...
Can we just turn the lights out, please? I've got a little bit of music I'd like to play. I'm joking.
Thank you very much. That the change that occurred between Super Collider and the making of Multiply was kind of based on a technological change in your life, true?
Partly true. Super Collider, Multiply. Now, 2002, 2005. A lot of people say the album took 5 years to make. It clearly took three. It was technological. I started to realise that actually making the Super Collider stuff, obviously I was using my voice a lot and I wanted to keep my voice in the forefront and I wanted to know how to record my voice and I wanted to know how to record everything after a while. I could afford to buy microphones and I started to like enjoy the luxury of space because Berlin is a place with a lot of room to manoeuvre. So I started to like find myself in rooms this size, larger, like with the capability of recording stuff. So I seized on that chance and met a few folks that taught me a few things, started to like build up my knowledge. And I became quite obsessed by acoustic recording because that's the thing. Like I said, I grew up with a sampler, sampling music, not really knowing how it was made, but finding like how certain sounds were potent and how certain other sounds didn't really touch me. So it gave me something to strive for when I actually finally got around to kind of having the means of production within my grasp. And that was something that I've always strived to kind of keep. So through all my albums, I've been the producer of the music along with being a writer.
But that change suddenly took, you know, your loops and everything else you were doing into the ears of a lot of people that never would have heard it otherwise. You signed with your record label. And I believe there was some gentleman named Beck that paid a little attention to your music, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, but you talk about the loops. Perhaps people don't know that the loops were... that was a way for me to present my music live. After I left Brighton, England, with the Super Collider era, I found myself in Berlin, and I thought, wow, I'm going to make that record for Warp Records, who I'd also recently signed to, and a record I missed out on the chronology was called Muddling Gear, a challenging record for a lot of people, something that came from the heart. But there you go. That's why a lot of people find me hard to bracket, and I don't really know where I'm coming from. Because I've had all these interests in Sun Ra, Music Concrete, and I showed all those interests on that record. Thought, God, I'm on Warp Records, I can do what I like. But anyway, Warp were expecting another record from me. There I was in Berlin, I spent all the advance for the album. I had no money, I thought, I've got to make some money. So I thought, I'd better play live. So I thought, how am I going to play live? Better play solo. So I worked out this way of playing solo, which involved looping my voice, creating music on the fly, which worked quite well, but it took a while for me to build up steam. I built up more and more steam. It started to become my sort of trademark after a while, in a way potentially more powerful than the recorded material. If you like, the recorded material became my ready-to-wear collection, and the live show, my haute couture, like explosion, and that was what I think that explosion drew the eye of Beck. And as a result, he asked me to support him on his 2006 tour, which I gracefully accepted. Gracefully? Graciously. And perhaps gracefully.
Princess Graciously.
Princess
Isn't she
gracious.
Over there?
Is she? Yeah. Let's keep it there.
I remember her. She had a big hit back in the day.
Which was?
Oh, here we go. I have to riff now. The Queen of Rock and Roll, of course.
I don't know it, but I'll pretend I do.
I don't know it either. Let's get to the present and Jim.
Okay.
And I have to ask you to do something.
The wind is gone, the ghosts.
Yeah, the ghosts are gone. We're
gone,
in the present
gone.
Now. We got a lot of questions to do the present.
Okay.
We're here to sell records. I understand that you are really good at imitating
it's gonna get
all...
presentable.
I understand you're really good at imitating all of the synthesizers you became tired of playing. So can you give me a few imitations of some of the electronic antiques you've left into the hands of other musicians?
I could try. Well, I mean, obviously, the first synthesizer that I got obsessed with was the Dwaalp machine, which we hear a lot in my band at the moment. But the one sound that seems to be, I don't know if I could still make it, actually, was this tone. The resonance. You know, you're turning a wheel and you're marvelling about resonance. You know, there's a lot to do with that, you know, turning something and thinking, is that good or is that better? It's quite an odd process. Of course, there's the universal sound for applause, rain, clapping. Yeah, I said that. What else have I got? The various guttural sounds, of course. The voice can't really go subsonic, but it tries. Sounds like... You know, sort of like machine noises. Stuff like that.
If you go outside the studio now, there are 25 Hare Krishnas waiting for your autograph based on that last imitation.
What do you think? You think so?
I think you've got a whole new audience.
Well, it's been a pleasure, isn't
it? See you, bye.
You are editing this, aren't you?
Of course.
You're going to make me seem like...
No, we're like not doing it. No edits. This is
snappy, you know.
This is it.
All right, good.
There were some very new ingredients in Jim, and you have to tell me a little bit of the story. You kind of alluded to your mix of producers in Dominic and Jason, but, I mean, they're a Canadian powerhouse. So tell me a little... A Canadian powerhouse.
I like that, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the sessions and how each of them affected the sound, because you chose two very alluring and different producers who really did some pretty wild stuff with the music that probably, when people listen to the record, it's a very beautiful, well-crafted record, but there was a lot that happened. So tell me a couple of stories about working with these boys.
You're talking about Multiply? You're talking about...
No, I'm talking about Jim.
You're talking about Jim?
Yeah.
First of all, me and Mocky were the producers of this record alongside Justin Stanley, who lives in Los Angeles, California, City of Dreams, and who I met on the Beck Tour, who's playing a lot of the instruments on the tour. And, well, after I'd done Multiply, see, I thought... It had sort of taken me down a road, and not to use the old road metaphor, but I'm going to anyway. But so there I was. I could have gone back, done a U-turn, gone more abstract. But I thought, no, I've come this far. I'm gonna keep on trucking. So I thought, okay, I know I have to do this with Mocky. I really wanted to make more music with him. We actually had a few gigs. Me, Mocky, and Gonzalez. Gonzalez was playing piano, Mocky on drums, and I was singing. So we needed new material for these little shows that we're doing that were kind of the end of the Multiply time. So the first song that we wrote actually was the song called Wait For Me. And it kind of like had that kind of... It just seemed to fit into the material from Multiply but somehow stand apart from it slightly. So with that in the bag and a few like sketches that I'd already been working on, I set to work with Mocky in about... Right about the end of 2006, I suppose. And I decided with him that we were going to write all this music just on the piano and guitar and not allow ourselves the luxury of recording anything. So we did it really, really, really traditionally and just kind of like sat there until we could look at each other and go, wicked. First one, solid. Chorus, sweet. You know, bridge, you know, everything's fine. Basically know that these were airtight compositions and then from there kind of actually take them all. We went to Los Angeles. We spent 14 days recording the rhythm tracks at Justin Stanley's studio with Alex Acuna, Nika Costa, Brian LeBarton. A bunch of crazy musicians from LA came in and it was like a crazy family get together. A lot of the people that I'd met on the Beck tour we had these bed tracks, like, pretty much in good shape, you know, and the experiment had worked out. The change of scenery from Berlin to Los Angeles proved to be a really shrewd move. And what remained were, like, three tracks that got recorded in Paris at Fairbear Studios, Studio A, which is about four times as big as this, a nice big, lofty place where I think Gainsbourg recorded and a few others. It's got a lot of history and it's a sweet room to record in. So that's kind of where Gonzalez came into the equation, actually. On this record, he was really mostly a keyboard player. And so he slammed out all the piano on Where'd You Go, Wait For Me and Green Light, and played drums on All I Want To Do. So we did those three songs in Paris, wrapped up the album. I did all my vocals in Berlin with a few like engineer mates of mine there. And it sounds like a fashion label, doesn't it?
What do you think, and hopefully you don't read a lot of your own reviews, I know that it never pays to, but what do you think, as people are doing interviews like this, is the most misunderstood part about your music and what you're trying to put out there?
Well, I mean, it just, like you say, some people will come to my sound, like now, and have only ever heard Jim. And so clearly there'll be something that they misunderstand in me, in the way I present myself. So there are some perhaps incongruous kind of like elements in the way I sell myself, talk even, do interviews, kind of prank around, do videos that are childish, things that I'm fond of, and you know, it's part of what makes me who I am, and part of what makes Jim who he is, you know. So I've got to like bring these things to the table. I feel like it's, I would be a liar if I just suddenly put on a corporate veil and tried to sort of do the squeaky clean, like, hey, you know, buy my stuff kind of routine. I am a bit of a mixed bag, but I try to think of that as an asset of mine, you know. I'm not a one-trick pony. I've clearly made and can make and have made all sorts of sound, some of it music. And just happens to be at the moment that I've kind of found a strata of my creative liquids, which is a pop liquid, and I'm just getting high on my own supply, and if that means fame and fortune, then so be it. But it's definitely not my aim. So perhaps there you go. There's a few things about me which could potentially be misunderstood.
How long have you known the unicorn and the little sort of feel-good video, and are you serious with her?
Well, you know, yeah, to be honest, we only knew each other a few minutes before I realised it was time for me to add her to my collection of deities. You know, I think deities look good on a wall, but not to be idolized as in the video, but you know, just to put them on the wall, perhaps hide them behind some plasterboard. Just so long as you know they're there. First song in the session today is called Another Day. Now, originally, it was written under the influence of rather strong Scotch whiskey, whose brand name I shall keep to myself. Needless to say, it was a fine, haunting dram, which I shall be returning to frequently as I get older. Anyway, I had drunk rather too much of this whiskey. It was a boring evening, and I was in search of inspiration. Mocky often said, get a bottle of whiskey and get inspired. It's funny, because he doesn't drink, but I never did it. I thought it was nonsense. But anyway, that night, I was high on my own supply again. And so I wafted out a tune, and I listened to it the next day, and it was a somber, kind of meandering ballad, a bit like this meandering ramble now, but it had something, and I extracted various elements of it and kind of held on to them, kind of took the essence of them, and whilst cutting a carrot in my kitchen, somehow I heard a gospel song, and I realised that the essence of that song would fit in nicely. And I'd like to say it was the rhythm of the chopping, but I don't really chop well, so it really wasn't. It was something about this carrot. And there I was, sitting on a gospel version of Another Day, which I just nipped in the bud 2 days before we flew to Los Angeles City of Dreams to record the bed tracks for the album, Jim. And it's a song about when to pipe up and when to pipe down. And I never did listen to my own advice. It's about the joy of silence. When to let it do the talking.